Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too. She is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Merry Christmas to you, Joan.
Merry Christmas to you, Jim.
And it's always nice to know what you can say, isn't it?
That's right. I'm very pro these days. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, me too. By the way, speaking of Christmas, Joan, speaking of the holiday season,
yes,
you'll be glad to know that today is a very special day for me.
Really?
It's Humbug Day.
What's Humbug Day?
Today is the day I get 12 humbugs without penalty.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
why
I get
today?
To say,
why
it's
today?
Because, it's because somebody
decided. The first
decided,
day of winter?
Because some forethinking Scrooge decided that we deserve a day.
Oh, okay.
So for all my fellow Scrooges out there and Scroogesses, there are one or two, I think. You're a little bit of a Scrooge, aren't you, Joan?
I'm a big Scrooge.
Yeah, so you see, exactly.
I celebrate Festivus.
You get 12 humbugs today.
12? Oh, I'm going to use them judiciously.
How about that? Yeah.
Can I say ba in front of each one?
You can do that, too. Yeah,
wow.
You get 12 of those, too.
That's pretty good.
This is also a great day, Joan. This is the day that the Mayflower landed on Plymouth Rock today.
Bad timing. Oof.
Yeah, they landed on, and exactly.
The first day of winter, bad timing.
And also, this is the day that the Soviet Union basically broke up.
Wow, that's a good day.
That's a great day. Exactly. So we got
and
humbug.
And I love this day. You were talking about this the last segment. I love this day because it's the shortest day of the year.
Yeah.
And from now on, the days are going to get longer.
I agree with you.
I can't wait.
I'm not depressed, but I'm sort of not as happy as I would be from the time that the daylight savings time changes to today.
Yeah.
Is always a little bit of a downer for me.
Right, I agree.
I like it when we've crossed the hump and we're moving toward daylight savings time.
Right.
Joan, if I didn't know better, well, let me rephrase this. Kiplinger doesn't have determined that our military is not doing very well in terms of readiness. Now, I know that you're not. I know that you're not talking about the men and women in uniform who are doing one heck of a job. You're talking
no,
about
not
the
at
overall.
All.
The overall.
We don't have enough of them, and we don't have enough resources for them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it boils down to. Now, the folks over in Iraq are doing a tremendous job.
And Afghanistan.
And often an even a better job than, I mean, and it's even more impressive because of the resource problems that they have to face.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that you learn in the military, and Joan, I joined the Army during the draft days. And I remained in the Army during the volunteer Army days, what they used to call Volar.
Okay.
So I saw both. I was trained by the old guys, by some of the brown shoe Army guys, they called them, and you know some of the folks who went back to World War II, and
okay.
I trained some of the young folks.
Yeah.
And it's always been this way, Joan. It's always been this way.
Oh.
In the 90s, one of the things that the folks used to complain when we weren't even at war in the 90s, I talked to military people who said we don't have what we need.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing is always. And my point is, one of the things you learn in the military is something called field expediency. You make do. You figure out how to make do with what you have.
Well, and there's the famous quote from Donald Rumsfeld: "You go with the army you have, not with the army that you wished you
had." That's right.
Now, but one thing I don't think that this lead touches on, if I'm not mistaken, that is an important problem is. The fact that the reservists are being stretched, I think.
You don't mention that, but that is one of my
point.
That was one of my annoying the things that are annoying me. I completely, and I've said this for a long time, Joan. You've heard me say this that in my opinion, reservists should not be so close to the point of deployment as they are, in my opinion.
Right.
Especially now that the United States is basically the only place that, the world's 911 calls go into.
Boy, that's sure true.
You know, that's another thing. I think that's another kind of an ameliorating factor, Joan, is that we are called upon to do a lot more than any other country in the world. And so that stretches us kind of thin, too, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. I guess one of the problems now is we have the Iraq conflict, and we also have Afghanistan, which continues to be a problem, and brave men and women are dying over there, too.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
No, I know it. And so the issue is, you know, I think what we've got to come to terms with, Joan, is what is the United States going to do about its role as the only real superpower, its only real military superpower? What are we going to do about that? Where are we going to spend our resources? How are we going to deploy them? How much do we need to commit? And, you know, that's another thing, Joan. We're having to compete against countries who are not doing this. They're not supporting. They're not, you know, never mind Iraq. Let's find another place that we all agree, you know, everybody agrees we need to look into. You know, are those companies, you think France is going to send somebody to that conflict?
Doubtful.
Yeah. But yet we still compete against them.
Right.
And our dollars, instead of going to research and development, is going to you know, get their backsides out of a crack if need be.
Right.
So I think that's another thing that we have to think about. But you guys make a good point, some very good points here, especially along the lines of, when you actually say that the military is having trouble with recruitment, I thought I read recently that recruitment was okay. Did I miss that?
Gosh, I don't know. I may have missed what you read.
Well, we need to get together on that then.
Yeah.
Here's what Kipling says. Recruitment is another huge problem. What does that mean?
Well, it says here that the Army can't even meet existing targets. I'm not sure about the Navy and the Marines, but from what I've read, it has been difficult to get folks, to bring folks in, even with promises of college and education and things like that.
Well, one of the things, I don't know if you've noticed, Joan, that much, but I have, and that is how much of a strain this entire thing has been on primarily the Army and the Marines, not so much I'm not dissing the Navy, folks. I'm just saying there's just not a lot of battleships needed for Iraq.
War. Yeah.
And also the Air Force.
Right.
Neither one of those two, Navy or the Air Force, haven't had that kind of stress on them that the Marines and the Army has.
Right.
Stand by, quick break, right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We got a lot more to come. Good stuff right after these messages. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and having a great visit with our good friend, Joan Pride. Joan, and Joan's with the Kipling Editors, by the way. This is an outstanding chart that you have at the bottom of page one.
Oh, you like that?
Tell the audience what that chart says.
U.S. versus the world. Military spending. I really wish your listeners could see this, because we've got one line for the U.S. and one line for the rest of the world.
Yeah, and everybody else, all the other countries added together on one line, on the planet, ladies and gentlemen. What's the little place there in Europe? What's that little teeny tiny
Luxembourg?
Luxembourg. Even Luxembourg is represented here, folks.
And it's a modest little increase from this year through 2010. A modest increase, and I guess it's up over $500 billion. It's only billion? Okay, $500 billion by 2010.
This is annually now.
Annually, maybe a little less than $500 billion now. And then
they basically crossed. I mean, what I'm saying, what you're saying is the U.S. is a little over the world's total, but only by a little bit. But that's not the news, is it?
And the lines cross. Yeah, the lines cross this year. But the news is the U.S. military. There's a gap and a widening gap between our line and their line because our spending levels will be. It looks like over $650 billion by 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Compared with $500 billion for the rest of the world.
Actually, it's closer to $700 billion, I think.
It's kind of halfway between $600 billion and $700 billion.
All right, think about this, folks. The entire U.S. population is no bigger than just the middle class in China.
Ah.
Our entire population is the size of the middle class in China. And yet our entire population is going to spend, what would that be, Joan, probably 30% more than the rest of the world on military. Now, folks, this is something that's needed. I mean, we still got folks out there like Iran and North Korea who are doing crazy things. And you guys point out, though, Joan, in the letter here, that the military that we're going to see 10 years from now is going to be vastly different than what we have now.
Well, yeah, this is kind of interesting. We're saying that we'll have brigades that are smaller and more nimble, and they will be more trained in what they're having to do now in Baghdad, urban warfare and crowd control.
Mm-hmm. And you know what else, Joan? I think technology is going to really change the face of military operations. We've got these flying drones now that people who grew up playing, you know, Game Boy are now driving these things around. And these are armed too, aren't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
These drones, and so they're going to fly around with the more our cameras, our intelligence on the ground gets better, and the cameras work, and the all the stealthy equipment that they put in those things, and they have these things armed. You get a guy like Del Zarqawi who, you know, kind of gets out of hand. You know, he doesn't want to look up at the sky and see a drone above him.
Right, right.
You know, he might think he can get away from the Marines coming in there, but that drone's going to get him.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things are going to change, but you know, Joan, I think that America is the wealthiest country in the world, and I think it's our responsibility to help other countries, to help try to be, you know, even if it's grudging sometimes by some people, to be the defendant of the less fortunate around the world.
Right.
And to keep despots like Chavez and Ahmadinejad and Kim Jong-il and those guys. Aren't you impressed I could say all three of their names?
I was, especially the Iranian guy. I'm not even going to try to say him.
Ahmadinejad.
Did you stand there and practice it for 15
no,
minutes
it's not
something?
That hard. It's not
yes,
that hard.
It is.
When you're polysyllabic, Joan, it's not that
oh,
hard.
Oh, that's my problem. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, but anyway, those guys are crazy. In fact, speaking of the Navy, you know, they're getting ready to roll a few carrier groups into the Arabian Gulf, and which the Iranians call the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting ready to nuzzle a few carriers up against Iran in the next few
oh,
weeks.
Oh no!
I think.
Great.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's great. I do think that's great. I'm looking forward to seeing Iran's attitude there. But anyway, Joan, this is a very important report that you guys give us on the military, on how they're doing. But you know, we're going to have to expect to spend a lot of money on the military, and over the next several years. And I don't think there's any way out of it. As long as there are bad people out there wanting to do evil things to us and other people. And nobody else seems to be stepping up to the task. They're letting the United States do it.
Right, and Al-Qaeda is still out there and other terrorist groups.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to – another thing you guys point out, and this is something that the people that I know in the military are telling me, and that is that more and more of our military are getting urban training.
Right.
The Marines have been doing it for years. They call it MOUNT. I've forgotten. Military operations in urban something or other. MOUNT, I think. And it's literally learning how to go in and neutralize buildings, take out the bad guys, and do it in an urban setting, street to street. When we come back, we're going to talk to Joan's going to talk to us, I should say, about how the automobile industry is going to be doing in 07. Yeah, that's a big industry. Our economy counts on these guys. We're going to talk about them, especially the big three, right after these messages. 29 after. Stay with us.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. It's all around. The clock's moved on around somehow. It's 34 after. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of our day. Joan Pride is our guest and senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog while you're there and all the other stuff, too. Joan, let's move over and talk about page two. Talk about the automobile industry.
All right.
Expect a modest drop in auto sales next year to 16.2. That's a 200,000 drop in 07 from 06, right?
Right.
And that's not just the big three. That's the whole auto industry, right?
Right. I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. But see, that's an important number to understand. But what it doesn't explain is market share. How much more the non-big three companies, the foreign companies, who either are shipping cars in or are making their cars here in the United States, like Mercedes, like Honda and Hyundai and Nissan, et cetera, they're making many of their cars here in the United States.
Well,
those companies have gotten bigger market share, haven't they?
Well, this statistic will tell you the tale. We just said that auto sales next year will be 16.2 million, a drop of 200,000. But we say U.S. automakers will cut production by a combined 700,000 or so. So, and that combined is only 9.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. The foreign automakers are really eating their lunch.
Ford recently borrowed several billion dollars in junk bonds.
Right.
Their bond rating, and GM too.
And what was their collateral?
You tell them.
Themselves.
You guys wrote it. Yeah. Their brand, which is basically Blue Sky,
yeah,
and their factories.
Right. And
Ford's factories. I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Well, Joan, their stuff is junk bonds. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, their rating is junk. The Ford and GM both have junk bond status on their
right.
bonds. That's the credit worthiness of their company.
Right.
Is basically not credit worthy.
And we say junk. We're not just kicking around any kind of term here. That means below investment grade.
Yeah, and which also is another word for very expensive.
Right. But very lucrative if you're holding the bonds.
Well, it may be.
If you're a gambler.
But who wants those factories, Joan, if they have to foreclose?
Right. Yeah, what are you going to do with them?
And who's going to foreclose on Ford?
Well,
that's the question.
I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility.
It's not. The mechanism is clearly there. You know, Joan, in 06, my 06 predictions, I predicted that a car, one of the big three would take bankruptcy, and I said it would probably be GM, but I did say one of the big three would take bankruptcy in 06. And Joan, even though I've already written my review of what I did, and I've already taken my score down, or I made my score known, I didn't take credit for the fact that Ford, I counted it as a miss. I said I missed that prediction. But the truth is, I really didn't, because if Ford hadn't been able to get those billions of dollars in junk bonds, they probably would have been in Chapter 11 by now.
Yeah, I don't know that that's a miss, but...
Well, technically, they didn't take bankruptcy. They had some capability. They had some financial capability to pull it out. But basically, technically, they're not bankrupt. Practically, they probably are.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs.
Unfortunately, it's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and GM is right behind them. If they can't get their employment practices, if they can't get lean and mean like the other companies are, they're history, Joan. They're toast.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't make me happy to say that, Joan, because I've been driving Fords for a long time.
Right.
I've bought lots and lots of Fords over the years. I'm not so much a GM man. I like Fords.
Yeah.
I always have. What about OPEC, Joan? Tell us about that.
Well, boy, you make me talk about all the bad news. Gee.
Well, you wrote this.
And hard to believe OPEC has discipline. I can't even believe this on oil output. And that's going to not only keep prices high, but send them higher.
Gas prices have gone up again, haven't they?
They have.
I would say $2.30 the other day a gallon.
Yeah, around here I'd say they've been up maybe about 20 cents. Now, that's still below $2.50, which, and of course, we're popping champagne corks.
But that's $4 a tank.
$2.50. Right, exactly. But we're saying that oil could get up to $70 by March, and then $80 by summer, maybe. Which means $2.80 a gallon, and maybe over three.
Yeah. That's gonna raise inflation, which is gonna raise interest rates, and it's gonna hurt an already cooling economy.
Right.
Stand by, Joan. Quick break. We'll talk about that right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And as you know, I always like telling you about their website, Kiplinger.com. It's a good one, and I encourage you to go there. But if you really want to take the most advantage of it, you'll subscribe to one of their publications, and then you'll get to go back into the deep part of the website where they got the really good stuff.
The bowels
of the website. That's exactly right. And that's Kiplinger.com. But they got this outstanding publication that Joan and I have worked off of now. I've been working on this now for 8.5 years, almost. And Joan, you and I will be together. This will be our 8th anniversary coming up in January.
Gee, it only feels like 9.
I know. You started when you were just a babe.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the Kiplinger letter, which is weekly, and it's the classic, the flagship, that everybody knows what it is. And if you're not a subscriber, I'd like to encourage you to think about it. They got a 30-day free trial, and then they got those three other ones, the biweeklies, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And I like for Joan to tell us about the other magazine.
Hey, it's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, and it's celebrating.
What's in that thing?
Pardon me?
What's in that thing?
Oh, everything you could imagine. Not just the right stocks and mutual funds to pick, but talks about, you know, things to buy like cars and cameras and saving for college and retirement savings.
Right.
It's chock full of consumer stuff.
And it's the official word on mutual funds, too, isn't it?
You bet. But they're celebrating their 60th anniversary.
Wow. And folks, I want to encourage you, if you haven't already done this, if you missed the interview that I did with Mr. Austin Kiplinger, the son of the founder, who's 88 years old, I encourage you to...
Nope. 88 years young.
Sorry about that. And he's a national treasure, ladies and gentlemen. I encourage you to go find his interview on my website and listen to it. It's amazing. Joan, let's move over and talk about... let's move down and talk about what happened this week. The government raided some meatpacking companies. And did I hear that they actually called them and told them they were going to do it?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
I heard
possible.
They called them and warned them. And they still got caught.
Boy, how dumb is that?
Yeah. What was it, like 1,200 people that they caught?
The pictures were amazing.
Bunch of fake IDs and everything.
Sure.
And they're saying, according to Kiplinger, you guys saying they're going to do more of that.
Well, I mean, that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. So what does this mean, Joan? What is this? Is this some kind of a new direction in the war on immigration, on illegal immigrants?
I think so, because we're saying that this was just sort of the start of a nationwide crackdown on this whole network of stolen IDs and things like that.
Right. Joan, another thing you guys point out, now wandering back over across the water, you guys point out that you think Lebanon's government is going to be collapsing because of Hezbollah?
Right, and you've seen the pictures of the protests. Hezbollah is putting a lot of pressure on this government, and we certainly don't want that to happen, but we're afraid it's going to.
Man, oh man.
Yeah. No good news. Why do I have to do all the bad news items?
Well, I don't know. I seem to be sending you, all those to you, but we've got Hezbollah in Lebanon, and that's not a good thing. And
no.
I'll tell you, I just got to believe that if what's his name, the prime minister who's still in the coma, I just lost his name. Who am I talking about? Sharon.
Right.
Ariel Sharon. I got to believe that if he hadn't gotten sick, I don't think that little war they had over there would have gone the same way.
Boy, that's and the poor man is still alive, I believe.
Yeah. What's the new guy's name?
Olmert.
Olmert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ehud Olmert. I just don't think he's got the same grit that Mr. Sharon had.
Well, when Sharon negotiated, he had a lot of credibility because he was such a tough guy.
Yeah, yeah. So, I tell you, folks, you know, we were talking earlier, Joan, about the military. We're still in a dangerous world that is not of our making. And, you know, we can't be naive, Joan, about what's going to be required of America.
Right.
In the future, to deal with idiots like Chavez and what's the guy's name who's the head of the Hezbollah? I've forgotten.
I don't know, but just don't make me say that Iranian guy's name.
That nut job, yeah. Well, and then the nut job, the wing nut Ahmadinejad in Iran.
Right.
For God's sake, I mean, did you hear that yesterday? He came out and said, you know, Israel and England, I think, and America, he's going to wipe them off the map. He's going to make them as if they were never there.
Well, he can talk like that, but if you notice, one of his opponents won an election in Iran.
I was going to ask you about that. What happened?
Very interesting. I was just starting to read about that in the paper, but what's interesting is there was an article today about a student-led movement that's trying to, I think overthrow is too strong a word, but they are totally protesting what he stands for because of the economic problems in Iran.
That's kind of
a hopeful sign.
That's very hopeful, and that's the kind of thing that could change. And you know, did you notice that the competitor to Chavez did pretty well this time?
Oh, interesting.
He got like 40-something% of the votes.
Yeah.
But by the way, I don't know if you know this, in that election down in Venezuela, Joan, they have like 16 million voters in a country of 24 million people.
Wow.
So it's like a statistical impossibility to have that many registered voters. So you wonder,
yeah,
some of
them have to be about 3 years old.
Exactly. Or not, how about non-existent?
Yeah.
About never were born?
Yeah.
But we got a lot of bad guys out there, folks. And the United States can't be naive about this. We've got to make sure that for ourselves, not to mention our friends, we can't be naive. We've got to be strong, and we got to be prepared to take the steps that are necessary in the future. I don't think there's any way out of that. So I think we can't be naive, and we certainly can't be appeasers. These guys, Ahmadinejad, Chavez, they don't understand appeasement unless they think except to think that it's weakness. Tintail, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. We're going to talk about Mr. Bernanke's wild ride in China recently. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Price, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, Mr. Bernanke, Ben Bernanke did something fairly unusual. Actually, according to my Fed expert, Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, very unusual. He went to China with a delegation of other cabinet members from the Bush administration this week.
Yeah, I saw the pictures, and it seemed kind of surprising to me. I never thought of, say, Mr. Greenspan or Mr. Volcker doing something like that.
Although Mr. Greenspan did go to Russia. He went over to Russia and tried to help them get their banking system.
But with administration officials?
Well, not with administration officials.
Yeah.
But you're right. But that's the point. Yeah, he joined a delegation to go over there. And what did they find out? What did we learn?
I don't remember.
Well, I know he wants to I know what they want to do is they want to get them to work on their currency. And I think they actually chided them while they were over there for not complying.
Well, they slapped their wrists a little bit, but that's about it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But back here in the United States, Mr. Bernanke wants a formal inflation target.
Yeah, and I guess not being the sophisticated inflation person that you are, I don't completely understand why you would want that. I mean, I understand the reasons here. He likes the predictability and transparency of a target, but isn't there kind of a de facto target now anyway?
Well, no, I don't think. Well, if it's de facto, it's only in their minds and in their playbook.
Yeah,
I don't think the Fed has ever said this is what we want to see. You know, it's always been kind of, you know, what they decided this year. And what I think he wants to do, and this is one element of the Fed I'm not necessarily an expert on, not that I am on anything, but I do watch them since I don't have a life. But I do think he wants to, you know, put a stake in the ground and say, okay, this is what we're willing to live with. This is where we are. And I think what that lets people know is that if you see inflation, if we find out that inflation has gone up to, let's say they decide that they want the indicator to be 1.75.
Yeah.
And if inflation goes to 2 and it looks like it's got a bullet, meaning it's going to keep going, expect to see your interest rates going up. Cost of money is going to go up.
Right. Well,
if you track two or three things, you don't have to be a financial genius to budget for higher cost of money. Or to expect if inflation is coming down, maybe to see, you know, the price of money coming down. And that way they sort of have a little more legitimacy, a little less of a Ouija board effect when they're raising and lowering rates.
But what's interesting is what this little item says is that let's say the inflation target was, let's say, 2%.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed would have to be raising interest rates now because inflation is higher than 2%. So
right.
We would still have interest rates going up at this point.
Well, but now, just because they got an inflation rate that they want to see it to, I don't know that they're going to say, but when it gets to above two, we absolutely will raise rates.
But then what's the point of having the target?
Just to let people know what they think is acceptable.
Oh.
I don't think they've ever said that before.
But I guess my point is if they go above the target and don't do anything, then
well, I think that there are a lot of other things to take into consideration. Is the economy faltering?
Right.
Can we live with a little inflation?
Right.
Is it only because of gasoline prices, which we think will come down in 6 months, or is it more fundamental? Is it more structural, not just about one commodity?
Right.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
That sounded pretty good, didn't it?
Not bad. Yeah, better than I could do.
Well, anyway, I'm actually glad to see them do this, because Joan, this is just another example of the Fed trying to be a little more transparent, and I think the market's like that, Joan.
Well, gosh, if you think back 10, 15 years, you were really reading the tea leaves back
right.
then.
Exactly, Joan. Quickly, let's move over and talk about. Let's move over to page 4 and talk quickly. You say that Windows Vista, the new operating system for Microsoft, is going to help IT spending next year.
Yes, and as you're...
It'll be available in January to consumers.
Right, and why it's not available by Christmas, I'll never know.
They just couldn't get their cornflakes together.
Right, that's too
bad, though. If you're a business and you're buying licenses, it's been available for a couple of months.
Yes, oh, that's right.
Yeah. Wireless networks, you say, will be everywhere in a few years. I agree.
Courtesy of WiMAX systems. Mm. This is very interesting. And they're doing for broadband what web access... for broadband web access, what cell phones have done for phone service. So that's
right.
Going to be pretty exciting.
It's wireless is one of the next killer apps, Joan, and it already is, really. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim. I hope you have a very happy holiday.
Hope you do, too, and we'll see you next time. Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I will be, too, but not for a little bit. I've got to go. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.